Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on what has been a cloudy and cool Tuesday. Very, very unlike the norm here in May. But, I mean, it's been pretty amazing. I went and got some gas a little earlier and was wishing I had on heavier clothes. So hope everybody is doing well here on this Tuesday. A big day. Auburn baseball playing their final regular season road game tonight up in Jacksonville as they look to gain some revenge over a Jacksonville State team that run ruled Auburn back in Auburn. And this is a big rematch tonight up in Jacksonville. Again, the final regular season road game for the Tigers. They will host the Georgia Bulldogs starting Thursday night in the final regular season series with a lot on the line. Georgia has already wrapped up the SEC regular season, but they want to assure themselves of a top eight national seed. You would think your SEC regular season champs at 21-6 would be a shoe-in, but maybe not. They need to play well, and Auburn is in a battle for the top four spots in the SEC, which would give them a double bye. But more importantly than that, they want to maintain where they are projected by just about everyone now, and that is also a top eight national seed, which would give you the opportunity, if you win your regional, to host a super regional. So a big week for Auburn baseball starting tonight in Jacksonville, and we have the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us here right at the top of the Tuesday show. Andy, how you doing today?
Bill, I'm doing very well. We just pulled into the ballpark here at Rudy Abbott Field, Jim K. Stadium. JSU out there taking BP. We're about to get set up in the booth, get ready for the final regular season road game for Auburn before, as you mentioned, the big series against Georgia starting Thursday night at 7. Our coverage tonight over on Wings 94.3 starts at 5:45.
Yeah, this a Jacksonville State team that run ruled Auburn earlier. And if I'm not mistaken, was that not Griffin Graves' season debut that night?
It may have been, and I think he's improved a great deal.
Oh yeah, no doubt,
including his four inning stint last week in Auburn's win at UAB up at Regents Field in Birmingham. And Auburn looks for him to take another step. I mean, this is a guy that could be a very important piece to Auburn's postseason pitching staff. Mm-hmm. To have a guy like Griffin Graves, who was so good for Auburn down the stretch of last season and pitched so well for Auburn in the Super Regional last year against Coastal Carolina. And that's what they're looking for from a Griffin Graves in his final start of the regular season here tonight. And then who knows what kind of role he plays next week at the SEC tournament, but I think is certainly a could be a very important piece to Auburn when it comes to the regional, the Super Regional, and hopefully a trip to Omaha, Nebraska this year.
Andy, let's look back on a really impressive series win in Starkville after, you know, a frustrating night Thursday against Mississippi State's ace, who's one of the best pitchers in the conference. Auburn was under pressure on Friday and Saturday to bounce back, and I was really, really impressed by the way the team delivered, especially the way the bats responded. I mean, you could talk about Alvarez too, and the way he answered the bell in a really big start on Friday night with Auburn down 1-0 in the series. But the way Auburn swung the bat on Friday and Saturday has them looking like a team that can hang with just about anybody.
Well, and to do it in front of 14,000 as well. I mean, that was the toughest atmosphere that Auburn has faced this season, those three games in Starkville last weekend. And Auburn responded. And listen, I mean, Thursday night, Auburn knew it would be tough because no matter who they started, and it turned out to be Marciano. They were going to be going on 2 days less rest because Auburn had played that Saturday doubleheader the week before, the weekend before down in College Station. And to Jake's credit, I mean, he went out and did it. I mean, he didn't have his best stuff, but gave Auburn a couple innings. And then Friday was the key to the series.
Oh, yes.
And Auburn jumped out to a 4-run lead. And to State's credit, they scored more 2-out runs on Saturday after doing that all, or excuse me, on Friday after doing that all Thursday as well. And then, you know, tied the game at the bottom of the eighth. And then Chase Frelick, who came up to lead off for Auburn in the ninth inning, did not have a base hit until that point and got a pitch that he hit over the right field wall. Auburn led by one. Jackson Sanders set down the 2, 3, and 4 hitters in order in the bottom half of the ninth. And Auburn had, I thought, one of its most impressive wins of the season. 5-4, winning that ball game. It reminded me of Game 3 at Florida, just the pressure mm-hmm. in that ball game. And then on Saturday, Auburn just unloaded.
Oh, yeah.
On Mississippi State. And Mississippi State was kind of in the same boat as Auburn Thursday. They were down pitching. Their starter has to leave the game with a rolled ankle. And so all of a sudden, they're having to make up some innings. And, you know, Rembert hits the home run. Bigaman hits the home run for Auburn. And Petrovic was really good. And then, you know, Auburn could basically, you know, bring Hetzler in to close out a game that wasn't even a save situation. And you get out of there with an enormous series win. Auburn's the sixth straight of the season. Auburn's first time that Auburn has won six straight conference series since the 1995 season when that team won 7 in a row. That was really a good, boy, that was a really good Auburn baseball team in 1995, and just really impressed with the way this Auburn ball club, when we talked, guys, about the second half of this season, you knew that you were going to get road trips to Florida and Texas A&M and Mississippi State, and you were still going to get Kentucky, and you were still going to get Oklahoma at home, and you were going to get a really good Georgia ball club at home. And look what Auburn has done over the second half. Listen, a year ago when Auburn did this, the back half schedule was a lot easier mm-hmm. for Auburn. To do what it has done against this schedule this year, I think, is all the more impressive.
Yeah, no question about it. And you're right, Andy, that Friday win was critical there for them. I mean, and this league is just unbelievable. You look now, and you would think, you know, having won 6 straight series, that Auburn would be in really good shape, and they are. But you look around, there's 7 teams that are separated right by a game and a half between 2nd and 8th place.
Well, and 2 of those teams that are ahead of Auburn have played 1 less game
right
than everybody else,
and that's going to end up costing. Yes, no question.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no question about that. I mean, it will. I won't be surprised. I mean, Texas gets Missouri this weekend, mm-hmm. and that's a sweep in my opinion for Texas. And so I think Texas right now is the odds-on favorite to be the number 2 team. But 3 and 4 in the league, and that's 2 round bye at the upcoming SEC
right
tournament, is enormous for these teams. And Auburn is in the role for that. Mississippi State's in the role for that.
Alabama's
in line for that. So is Mississippi State. So is A&M. So a lot to play for over the last 4 games here tonight. This is another game, another top 25 game on the road for this Auburn team. This is as good as Jacksonville State team as we've seen in a long, long time. And you're right. I mean, what they did to Auburn in Auburn earlier this year, that was no fluke. And Auburn was outplayed in every phase of the game on that Tuesday night by Jacksonville State. And this is a Jacksonville State team that's already clinched a share of Conference USA. They close the year at Dallas Baptist this weekend. They're going to win a conference championship. They're going to be the number 1 seed at Conference USA. I don't think that they're probably in position to host, but how would you like to get this as a number 2 seed coming to your house
for a regional this year? It's a trendy pick in a lot of the tournament projections. Andy,
yeah, I've seen them as a number 2 in Athens.
I've seen them as a number 2 in Auburn. I've seen mm-hmm. folks who think that Jacksonville State could be one of the likelier 2 seeds. You know, that there's a very real chance this isn't over after tonight between Auburn and Jacksonville State.
Well, Jacksonville State has come to Auburn in a regional before and wasn't as good as this ball club is. Mm. I think that was a Jacksonville State team that put on a run at that year and won their conference tournament This is a Jacksonville State team. I don't think that it has to win the conference tournament to be in the NCAA this year. You don't say that very often in this day and age about Conference USA, but that's how good this Jacksonville State team is. It is a pesky team. They will bunt. They will run. They play small ball, and they can pitch it. And so this is a very, very tough final regular season road game for Auburn. You don't see this Auburn ball club dodging a team like Kentucky has done with its midweek game this week.
Hey, yeah, Andy, if you see our old pal Charles Kelly up there, right? I mean, you know, give him a shout. He's still the coach up there, right?
I won't be at all surprised if we don't see Coach Kelly out here.
Yeah,
for this ball game.
Absolutely, seems like something.
I think there'll be a couple thousand for this ball game tonight. I think it's going to be this is a very, very big game. They had a very big crowd on hand when Alabama was in town. I expect them to have a huge crowd on hand for this game tonight with Auburn as well.
Yeah, you're right, because they have so much to play for. Now, I was going to bring that up to Kentucky a day after the NCAA sent out a notice strongly encouraging teams not to cancel midweek games. Kentucky does just that.
Well, and so okay, then what happens? I mean,
that's the thing. They didn't say there was any consequences if they did.
No. I don't know. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, Auburn didn't do that with this one tonight, did it?
No. No, and it's a good thing. I mean, it's not going to – well, the thing is, you want to win this one. Auburn's got a little bit to play for. They've got a little chip on their shoulder from what happened the first time. I think Griffin, you know, again, he came in relief in a game that was already getting out of hand in his first outing of the year, and it'd be great to see him go out and pitch well tonight. As you said, Auburn – definitely looking, you know, Butch definitely looking for someone else who could help them here in the postseason.
Right. Well, they like what they've seen from L.J. Cormier. They like what they've seen from Abe Chancellor. But this is a guy in Griffin Graves who gets the start for Auburn tonight that Auburn thought would be in its weekend rotation
going
into the season before his injury. Now, Auburn has been outstanding with its weekend rotation, and it's four. Let's put it that way, because that quartet of Sanders and Petrovic and Alvarez and Marciano is as good as Auburn's had in a long, long time. And I still haven't been able to find a better foursome on a weekend than Auburn's had, at least in my 32 years, Bill. You go back beyond that. But if you can add a Griffin Graves to that, to a Hetzler, to a Chancellor, to a Cormier, my goodness, you're in outstanding shape for the postseason run.
Well, I mean, the fact that Auburn is so high nationally in pitching and in its pitching stats with the schedule that they have played is something unprecedented. Auburn has had some gaudy pitching numbers at times, but never against the strength of schedule that they've had this year.
A year ago, you heard people say, well, great, that was such a good second half for Auburn, but look at their schedule. You don't say that this year. You can't say that this year. What Auburn has done in the second half of the season against this schedule is to be applauded, in my opinion.
Yeah, no question. Andy, I know you're short on time today, but, I mean, there's still plenty going on. Women's golf, I haven't seen – how have things gone today? Have you gotten an update?
They finished in second place today, one more round tomorrow. They need to be in the top five to advance to the Nationals. They put themselves in very good shape to do that. They had a huge second day. I think Anna Davis shot 65 in today's second round. So they put themselves in very good shape. Of course, starting Friday morning at 9 o'clock, Auburn women's tennis opens up play at the NCAA championships. Mm-hmm. Auburn will play LSU at 9 o'clock Central Time in Athens, Georgia. The winner gets Pepperdine or Ohio State on Saturday. A week from or coming up this Monday, men's golf will open play in the NCAA regional. The Tigers will be playing in Athens, Georgia. And don't forget, starting Thursday out at the Hutzel Rosen Track, it's the SEC Championships on the Auburn campus this weekend. And then this weekend, of course, Auburn baseball, 7 o'clock on Friday, 7 o'clock on Saturday, and 2 o'clock on Sunday. Friday, they'll put the jersey of Josh Donaldson on the Wall of Fame at Auburn. It's a graduation weekend as well. There's a lot going on. This week on the Talking Tigers podcast is with Josh Donaldson. Able to get with him a couple weeks ago and air that this week on the week that he goes on Auburn's Wall of Fame. Coming up on Monday, you'll hear from Auburn's new gymnastics coach, Brian Roberts on the Talking Tigers podcast. And then a week from Monday, back to the folks behind the scenes for Auburn football. Harding Harper III, who is Auburn's executive director for recruiting and scouting at Auburn, is on the Talking Tigers podcast. So a ton going on right now. And great to be with you guys today. We're on the air tonight at 5:45 over on Wings 94.3.
Looking forward to it, Andy. Have a great broadcast. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day. War Eagle.
Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us here as he's just getting things set up as they just got there in Jacksonville. Auburn and Jack State tonight. Again, 6 o'clock is first pitch over on Wings 94.3. We'll get to our first break of the show. I'll open up the phone lines. Come on in and join us. 334-321-1390 here on the Tuesday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7.
Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio on this Tuesday afternoon. Our thanks to Andy Burcham for joining us from Jacksonville. Big ball game for Griffin Graves. I mean, it was his. I looked back, and that was his season debut. Remember beforehand, Butch Thompson said they hoped to get Griffin in the game. Jack State jumped out to an early lead. Griffin came in with a game. It was already down 4 or 5, and not the kind of situation you wanted to bring him in for his season debut. And, he struggled. I don't think he completed an inning, gave up 2 or 3 runs, but has pitched much better since then, so he'll be on the mound for the Tigers tonight as Auburn looking to keep the momentum going before they host Georgia. And by the way, yes, it's Thursday through Saturday. Everybody plays Thursday through Saturday this weekend in the conference because of the SEC tournament being next week.
So we were talking during the break about
I had not seen all the comments.
Well, I mean, Destin's coming up later this month. Oh, yeah. SEC meetings and there figures to be a lot of sort of big picture stuff talked about. But there are the storylines this season in the SEC. Lane Kiffin leaving for another job in the conference and sort of the messy divorce there with Ole Miss. All the turnover we had, new coaches at Auburn and Florida. It's in Arkansas. I mean, it's a new look SEC. Yesterday there were quotes from Lane Kiffin about, I guess these were excerpts from an interview he did with Vanity Fair, and he talked about the difficulty he had in recruiting certain players to Ole Miss because of the stigma attached to Oxford, Mississippi. Quote from Lane Kiffin, players would say, "Hey, coach, we really like you, but my grandparents aren't letting me move to Oxford, Mississippi." That doesn't come up when you say Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Parents were sitting here this weekend saying the campus's diversity feels so great. It feels like there's no segregation, and that's what we want for our kid because that's the real world, unquote.
I mean, the thing is, it's not the most shocking thing you've ever heard. I mean,
he's not the first coach to bring it up.
No, he's not. Absolutely not. Tommy Tuberville talked about some of the problems and the rebel flag and, concerns of that in Oxford. And, yes, I mean, times have passed. 3 decades or so have passed since then. But there are still some stigmas.
And then in a sort of an unrelated Ole Miss situation, today – Texas head coach Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah, this one definitely seems much more like a real shot at Ole Miss. I mean, Lane came out and said, "Look,
he wasn't trying to take."
He was just stating some facts.
Lane offered a clarification.
I wonder if Sark is going to say these are facts.
Also, Kiffin talked to Ole Miss or talked to On Three today, and said, I really apologize if anybody at Ole Miss or in Mississippi was offended. A 4-hour interview. I was asked a lot of questions on a lot of things. Ole Miss has been wonderful to me and my family, unquote. It's like a lot of, he was walking back if any of it was sort of taken controversially. Mm-hmm. Steve Sarkisian today, talking with USA Today, the money quote is all you have to do is take basket weaving and you can get an Ole Miss degree.
Well, he started. I guess he's saying what happened with the Clemson player who went to Ole Miss after being already in class at Clemson wouldn't happen at Texas.
Yes. I mean, and it sort of the conversation starts with talk of, I believe the player's name was Luke Ferrelli, the linebacker who had signed with Clemson and was taking classes at Clemson, but the portal was still open, and he was convinced to go back into the portal and ultimately sign with Ole Miss. And in a wide-ranging interview, which is online right now, where Sarkisian talks about a lot of different mm-hmm. topics in college football, Steve Sarkisian is explaining that something like that wouldn't happen at Texas, and he said, and I'm quoting, quote, "At Texas, we will only take 50% of a player's academic credit hours. You may be a semester from graduating, but you're going all the way back to 50% if you play here and want a degree. But at Ole Miss, they can take you. All you have to do is take basket weaving, and you can get an Ole Miss degree," unquote.
All right, if he had not said the basket weaving thing, it would have been much less of a shot. I mean, he could have just said, you know, talking about how tough it is to get into Texas as a transfer. So does that mean
you're going to ask me, and I'm going to say, I assume so.
Just think about this. That makes it sound like very unlikely you're going to get upperclassmen transferring into Texas. If they're only going to get half of their credits, then it's going to take you a lot longer to graduate. Now, if you're finishing up your first or maybe even your second year of school, maybe you could tolerate an extra year.
Didn't Auburn just lose a wide receiver to Texas who was a third year?
I guess Cam Coleman's going to go back and only have...
Didn't Auburn just lose a basketball player to Texas who was a third year? Elijah Freeman? The 50%.
I don't doubt that there are some schools it's tougher to get into. He could have said it like that, without saying that all you need to do at Ole Miss is take basket weaving.
And then John Sumrall.
Oh yeah, John Sumrall. Chimes in as well.
Chimes in, former Ole Miss assistant, current head coach at Florida. He wrote on Twitter, quote, "Grateful to coach at a top 10 public university that also offers advanced basket weaving," unquote, which is, I mean, I don't.
That's an attempt at humor.
I don't totally get it.
That's a little awkward. I mean, it's like, is he saying, "We're proud that we'll take anybody too. We take care of our players here. Maybe you don't at Texas, Steve." I don't know.
But that's so. And again, Ole Miss has to be sitting there like,
what did we do?
Well, aside from taking
a guy who was already in class, that according to Dabo Swinney was in class when Pete Golding called him.
And I mean, getting back to, I guess that part of this, like, should the rule be that your first decision in the portal is somewhat binding?
Well, I would say once you have enrolled. It should be.
But the portal's still open, right? I mean,
well, it doesn't matter. Once you've enrolled somewhere, it seems like that's it. It closes. Your doorway, your portal has closed.
That's the part.
Yes.
And that's the part that I think is under some question right now as to, like.
Yeah, do you just stay in the portal? It's like once you enter the portal, you're there. It doesn't matter. I mean, if that were the case, are players that are practicing in the fall still in the portal?
Well, the portal's closed. You're suggesting that they went into the portal.
Oh, okay. You're saying because the portal window is still open.
I think that's the thing that folks are pointing out. I think the thought that the portal window was still open was the loophole for this.
Yeah, but he enrolled and was attending classes.
And that's my question: is that once you make a decision, in theory, that like you shouldn't be able to jump back into the
players have made decisions and then change their mind, but it's before they had started school somewhere. I would say once you're enrolled, and especially started classes, it's too late.
Okay, so like a local example.
Because, I mean, the portal does extend into spring term.
More of a, like, the difference between a player switching schools and enrolling at that new school and then thinking about maybe on the last day the portal's still open, thinking about going back into the portal and going somewhere else. There's a difference between that and a player initially deciding he wants to stay at his current school, and then maybe 3 days later, rethinking things and deciding he wants. Like there does seem to be a distinction between like a Sebastian Williams Adams example or a Chad Baker Mazzara example from the last couple of years.
Saying they're going to stay and then leave.
But even after a couple of days, as opposed to like it feels like maybe there's
maybe that's the reason that was allowed, because you're worried about preventing players from leaving.
I'd sort of like hey, the portal's open to you, but once you make a decision, once you push the button and let a school know you're the choice, you probably shouldn't be allowed to get back into that portal window and reopen the negotiations. Like that first choice should be, and you know what, and that would probably cut down on some of the tampering. Mm-hmm. If the idea that if that first choice was binding and final,
it may slow down that first choice, but that's fine. Make sure you make the right decision.
I think coaches would rather have guys make the right decision first, right, as opposed to make a decision but keep their options open.
Well,
that's
the thing. It's like, I'm going to take this until I get a better offer. Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah, I sort of like that if you, again, listen to all your offers, get the best offer you can, but once you make a decision, push that button and sort of refrain from reopening mm-hmm. things until next season is over. Maybe, like, you know, give it a season before you reopen the portal. I can understand how frustrating it would be if you think you've done all the work to land a guy and he said yes and he came and enrolled at your school and then decided to reopen things and go somewhere else. Because replacing that player is suddenly a lot more difficult than if he'd initially said no to you.
Yeah, because you had invested your time and your money recruiting this player, and probably then told other players, all right, we filled our needs. Mm-hmm. You're better off finding another place.
Sure. And again, like, I don't blame anyone for getting the best offer they can.
No.
Again, this is like the redshirt rule, where players have the option after three games to decide to call it a season and come back next year. And it's like, I don't like a system that allows a player to, like, even if that's, I can't, even if I'm not blaming a guy for making that individual choice, because, yeah, you get to play another year of college football.
Well, that's why the 5 for 5 just makes so much sense. Just go ahead and play, and then if you want to leave, leave.
And I would say a system that allows guys to make a choice in the portal and then back out of that choice mm-hmm. and reopen the negotiation and listen to offers, I would say is maybe a system that could be reformed and cleaned up a little bit.
I want to see either Ole Miss or Florida, you know, post basket weaving as a you know.
Someone at Ole Miss next year.
That's an elective that all the players are going to take.
When they introduce the starting lineups,
I want to see that.
Now the players
majoring in basketball.
Players don't say their majors anymore on the starting lineup introductions. But Ole Miss's quarterback, right? Trinidad's got to say he's majoring in basket weaving now is the answer. And it's worth pointing out, LSU at Ole Miss September 19th. Mm-hmm. So keep in mind too that circled games in the
there will be a little emotion there involved from the crowd in Oxford.
Yeah, that's a high stakes one because you'd love to beat them. Boy, you'd hate to lose early on to the new look LSU Tigers with Lane Kiffin.
All right. We'd love your thoughts on that. Anything going on in the world of sports? Don't forget, coming up in about an hour, Jake Crane of Crane and Cone will join us. Until then, phone lines are wide open. Come on in here on the Tuesday Drive.
NAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. And while we're in break, notification from Auburn Athletics that the kickoff time for the Auburn-Baylor game has been set. The Aflac kickoff game at Mercedes-Benz will kick off at 2:30.
Broadcast on ABC as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll learn more about Auburn's schedule, the specifics in the coming weeks as we get closer to the 2026 season. But Auburn-Baylor kicking off on the on opening day, and that one is going to be on that's going to be 2:30 on ABC.
334-321-1390. Let's get to the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Brian, gets us started. Hey, Brian.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good to talk to you again. I wasn't planning on calling in today, but your last topic before the break was interesting because I went to Auburn's graduation last weekend. Both my nephews graduated, and
congratulations. Good.
Thank you. It's good to have them part of the family. In the graduation book, the handbook that they give you, you know, with all the students and all the majors they're graduating in, Auburn has
interdisciplinary studies,
correct. Mm-hmm. And guess who was on those lists? A lot of our football players.
Well, I know that 66 student athletes graduated. I saw that, and that's a very, eclectic. It's sort of varied, varied, curriculum.
Yeah, the way it sounded like or read in the book was like it was like they don't have a declared major, but they took enough classes to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far
that
as
that wasn't
the portal,
available when I was in
yeah,
school.
It's sort of yeah, yeah. And there are some because we've talked about interdisciplinary studies before. It's a major that some schools have. I mean, yeah, it's a way to. If you have players with varied academic backgrounds, you know, if they bounce,
if they have changed their major,
yes,
that's something that at times would really set you back. And because the NCAA wants you to stay on course to graduate.
There are a couple of specific interdisciplinary studies. Like there's a problem solving class. There's a life, career, and everything class. There's a foundation of interdisciplinary studies class. There are a couple of major specific classes, but then a lot of the rest of it is, yeah, do you have...
Another one used to be called general studies. Remember, Brian?
Yep.
Yes. I mean, listen, a college graduate's a college graduate, and as far as I'm concerned...
It's a fascinating major because it usually encompasses like, you know, 21 to, I think it's, I don't know the exact number. I want to say maybe it's 24, but it's, you need to have a certain number of hours from
different,
mm-hmm. yeah, different colleges. And some of that does need to be junior level and senior level coursework. And so it's a really interesting sort of like if you're interested in what history and law and something maybe outside the College of Liberal Arts, like it's a, it's a curious way to combine a like Bill said, an eclectic body of work.
Yeah. Well, I was still in Auburn when we had quarters, so
mm-hmm. yep.
I miss those days.
You missed those days? I did not like having Christmas break and coming back, and there was still work to be done from the quarter.
Was there? I thought spring quarter started in January because I remember coming back Thanksgiving, the week after Thanksgiving we had to come back, and then there was finals. But then we had off for at least when I graduated in '99. So
oh yeah,
Bill, you're
definitely
years
after
older
me.
Than me. But
oh yeah,
I think I well, thought
Bill was,
when we
Bill
came
was scheduling
back,
classes
the new
by then.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say on the transfer portal real quick, the one thing that I'd love to see them do that I thought made the most sense to me was you get, you know, you go into school, obviously you pick your first college. If it doesn't work out there, you get one transfer portal. And then if your new college you picked, if that coach leaves, then you can transfer again. But you get one free transfer rule. And then after that, unless your coach leaves, you're stuck, you're in the place you're at, because otherwise these kids have no accountability for what they choose. I mean, we all know that. They can go wherever they want, wherever the money's the best. They got to be held accountable.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen sort of any way to restrict, like, you know, it fell apart in court. You know what I mean? Like, that's sort of where this started. I mean, it wasn't all that long ago that there was a rule making players sit out a year if they transferred and they were underclassmen. I don't know about... Especially upperclassmen, I hate the idea of telling a fourth year or fifth year player, "Well, you already used your one transfer, so you're stuck here." I sort of want to make younger players, stick to the decision they made out of high school for a year or two. Like I think the bigger problem is the idea of freshmen and sophomores leaving after 1 year, and it sort of dissuades coaches from development. I'd like a situation where maybe you're agreeing to the school you picked out of high school for 2 or 3 years, and then after that, once you've put your 2 or 3 years in, if you want to leave as a third year rising to fourth year, you can go wherever you want. If you want to leave as a fourth year, go into a fifth year. Like, I'm fine with the older players that have paid their dues being able to move along. I think it's the younger players where I'd really like to see whether it's maybe you're signing away your exclusive D1 rights. And if you're not going to play there for the first 3 years, you got to drop down or you got to go to the junior college level or something like that. But now I'm kind of fine with seniors and fifth-year players having earned the right to go wherever they want.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more agreeable to that, your scenario, Dan. I mean, it just goes back to yesterday's conversation we had, or when we were talking about the 5-year rule that, you know, you said, well, or I think it was Bill mentioned about high school coaches really, you know, wanting to keep the age limit down. I think the bigger issue for incoming freshmen is the fact that you can leave after freshman year. And just like we're seeing now, you don't want to spend buku money on a quarterback that as a 5-star that could leave you after 1 year.
I think it's a totally fair question as to why you would recruit freshmen who can't help you immediately. Right? In an era where everybody can leave after 1 year, and it's like the developmental players that you may have signed not all that long ago, knowing that it's like, okay, they're close but not ready, like bring them in and give it some time. I can understand why coaches would be discouraged from signing those kind of players today.
Well, we're probably gonna see it this year with Cam. You know, he had some decent years with us, and I get that, but not for what we paid him. And you know, he's probably going to have his best year at Texas. So I don't know. We'll find out. But appreciate the call, guys, or taking my call as always.
Hey, great hearing from you, Brian. And yeah, you would think. I mean, I think he's got a good bit more talent around him and a better system that he's going into than he is here now.
No, but it raised the question. I do
wonder if only 50% of his credits transferred.
I mean, you can ask Sark about that at Media Days. I guess we can ask about ask Cam Coleman about it at Media Days. With a system where there's free movement after every year, I can understand both the that's the system that, you know, you had a system in place and things fell apart and now players can leave after every year if they want to. I can also understand why folks want to get that.
Well, and so many people and Don, you know, and it's great when we have Coach Dunn in it, but a lot of mentors, and when you're dealing with 18-year-olds, and they're away from home for the first time in college, not just athletes. There's some growing up to be done, and it's easier to just go, hey, I don't like it, and jump.
Sure.
And if you have to put in a couple of years at a place, you know, again, try to make sure you're making the right decision when you get there. And I don't know how many times we've heard of players, and you hear some of the greats. I mean, you know, from Bo Jackson, but I mean, many, 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 many athletes go to some place, and they're not sure it's the place they're going to be. But after they go through some tough times, they mature and they realize, oh, this is the right place.
I compare it to the rule that requires you to play college baseball for 3 years before you go pro. Like, to me, it's a similar deal where it's like there's you know, it's sort of the understanding, like, all right, settle in. Mm-hmm. You're in college baseball for 3 years if you're making that decision to out of high school. You're making that decision to play
3 years or 21.
Yeah,
right.
To play D1 college baseball. I think that a similar sort of deal where it's like, all right, when you sign with a D1 program out of high school, this is your D1 program for 2 or 3 seasons.
I could see now if there's a coaching change, then sure.
Sure. But under
but if not, then okay. You're in for a, you know, at least a 2-year stint.
And I think that would benefit. I mean, I
oh,
I mean, I can understand why freshmen
stabilize things an awful lot more for young players and for the coaches that are trying to recruit. You'd take more chances on guys.
I'll tell you who probably gets kind of screwed over in that scenario would be, like, a perfect example would be the freshman who was sort of an under the radar prospect at Colorado in men's basketball and ended up averaging 20 points a game this year and went to Texas and was one of the top guards in the portal. Like, somebody like that wouldn't be able to renegotiate after 1 year with the threat that I'm leaving.
But it's not like a 6-year term in the military or something where you're past your prime by the time you're able to make a move.
And in theory, you can still earn all the NIL money from your marketability, right. Your name, image, and likeness. You know, you can still, because of your performance, you can still make that money. But like, yeah, like, or even, I guess, more local, like Sebastian Williams Adams, right? Would not be able to renegotiate after 1 year at a school. You know, he would have had to those kind of players would lose out in a scenario where you're guaranteed.
They'd have to wait another year.
They'd have to wait another year. But I don't know. I think that I could see how it benefits a lot of a lot of different corners of college basketball. College athletics would benefit from a rule that sort of locks you into a school if you sign with them out of high school for your first. Maybe three's too restrictive. Maybe it's got to be two. But okay, you know what? Even two, I think, would be at least a start would be a compromise.
Absolutely.
A lot of coaches would be happy with.
Oh, absolutely. I think it'd be much more tolerable.
I think it would change how you recruit freshmen.
I agree.
If you knew that you had them for the first 2 years of their careers.
And Brian, you're right. I mean, it was Thanksgiving. You'd come back from Thanksgiving and have finals and things like that. It was winter, but it was winter quarter. Winter quarter would start like early January because the fall quarter didn't start until well after. It was mid to late September before you'd start fall quarter.
I'm pretty sure we were on semesters by the time I got here.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we
trained
early 2000s. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Plenty of time for you to join us. Again, Jake Crane joins us at 5:30, but till then, we'd love to hear from you here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Paid for by McGinnis for Alabama.
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of hour number one of the Tuesday Drive. Let's see, one thing we haven't mentioned, the other news of the day.
What do you got?
Auburn basketball going to take on Wisconsin up in Nashville in December.
Should be a fun one. Auburn, looking to add more, and we'll see how ambitious the non-conference schedule is this year for Stephen Pearlie. He sort of, I think at times it was
a little too ambitious last year for a brand new roster.
And I think ultimately, a team that probably because of some of the losses they took in non-conference, and they didn't have a bad non-conference loss.
No, they didn't. They just had too many of them.
Yeah, but everyone Auburn beat in non-conference play. It was good teams. I mean, even if some of the losses were unsightly, Michigan and Arizona and Purdue blowing Auburn out, it wasn't like you were losing to non-tournament teams or teams that you shouldn't be losing to. But you're right, there were just too many of them, and I wonder if. I wonder if one of the lessons from this past year is maybe Auburn needed more easy home wins in November and December instead of really, really difficult road games. Some of that was the second game of a two game series.
Right. The schedule when you had a team like Auburn had year before last, that schedule is not too ambitious. Last year's was a bit too ambitious. We'll see. But, I mean, this is a good start with a December 19th matchup at Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. Tickets are going to go on sale to the general public this Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. So a Wisconsin team that finished in the top 25 last year, won 24 games. So that's a nice that's actually the start of Christmas week or the 6 days before Christmas. What day of the week is that a weekend?
What's the day again?
The 19th, December 19th.
December 19th.
I don't see the day of the week. It is Saturday. Yeah, Saturday the 19th.
Yep.
So Christmas, that should be a great Great opportunity. I would think those tickets will sell well. A lot of Auburn fans in the Nashville area.
That's 2 weeks after the SEC championship game. And,
it is.
And that would probably be, maybe there's college football playoff action.
Ooh, there may be.
That day as well. But that's always, yeah, the second half of December is when you get some really interesting, usually get some pretty interesting non-conference games in college basketball. And you also get conference play just right around the corner, and this will be a good warm-up.
Less than 2 weeks away from conference play.
Yeah,
so
good game for Auburn to put on the
schedule. Good matchup. So, yeah, that was announced today as well. We're halfway done with the Tuesday drive. Again, first half of second hour, we're wide open for your phone calls before Jake Crane joins us at the bottom of the hour. So come on in as we come back for hour number two of the Tuesday drive.
Sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to the second hour of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan with you here on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's doing well. A couple of things going on. Let's see. We know the kickoff time now for the Auburn-Baylor football game. It is the Aflac kickoff game now that it has been moved to Atlanta. And that is a 2:30 ABC kickoff for Auburn and Baylor.
Who sponsored it forever that I'm blanking on? Wasn't there was there another has it been Aflac?
Chick-fil-A,
that's right. I was gonna say it was like
it was the Chick-fil-A kickoff game.
Yeah,
forever.
And going back to
we used to see what's his name from Chick-fil-A every year at Media Days.
Remember, but it was Saban and Clemson. That kickoff classic 20 years ago, the game at like the first one. In Atlanta, like ever since, like yeah, Chick-fil-A branding was all over.
Oh yes,
that thing and the bowl game too. I mean, the two big Atlanta, beginning and end of the season. So Auburn heading there, first time Auburn's played in it since. Got to go back to the Washington game, right when they played in Atlanta and to open the season back in 18. Auburn opens the season against Washington.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Mercedes-Benz.
I think the release said 2012, 15, and 18. Auburn has played in those kickoff.
Clemson, the opponent, the other two other two games, but yeah, should be and Auburn was going to play Carolina, right? Wasn't that on the docket? Auburn and Carolina
were
going to do that in one of the maybe in the COVID year, but it's should be a fun early test for Alex Golish and company. Shame the game's not in Auburn, but it should be a good time in Atlanta.
Yeah, Gary Stilkin was the guy.
That's
remember
right.
From Chick-fil-A.
That's right.
He was always there and very popular on Media Row.
Baseball tonight on the Auburn Sports Network?
Absolutely. Jacksonville State, who run-ruled Auburn. I think it was a 15-4 Jack State win back in the – and that was the season debut for Griffin Graves. Didn't get the start, came in relief and in a game that was already getting out of control, and he struggled, has pitched better since then, and looking to – continue to make a push to be someone that Auburn could count on in the postseason. But Griffin Graves will take the mound for the Tigers tonight up in Jacksonville. The broadcast will start at 5:45. First pitch right around 6 o'clock tonight over on Wings 94.3.
I haven't mentioned didn't mention it yesterday. Ahmad Hardy.
Yeah, how about that?
I mean, star running back for Missouri, all SEC selection. Mm-hmm. Last year, apparently late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. A concert in his native Mississippi reports that he was shot in the leg and was in surgery, is in stable condition now following surgery.
You just don't know what the status will be for him for this fall.
Yeah, the latest is, you know, Pete Thamel is reporting that he's out of the hospital and he's you know, planning on heading back to Missouri's campus, the goal of playing this season. But a gunshot wound to the leg for Ahmad Hardy, the ULM transfer who had nearly 1,400 yards last year rushing for the Missouri Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, a guy that was so good before he transferred in there to Missouri, one of the better pickups last year for a Missouri team that really, really, you know, runs the ball.
We saw him at ULM,
yes,
right?
We did.
Yeah, he was on that ULM team that played late in the 2014
season. He didn't have a great
season.
Game against Auburn, but he had a great season.
No, he's
there at ULM.
Yeah, first team All-American, SEC newcomer of the year last year, would have been one of your top preseason picks for first team All Conference, things like that. But his status now in jeopardy after a violent incident at a concert in Mississippi.
Yeah. So that's a couple of football notes. Let's see. I'm trying to think of it. We have calls. We'll talk more about some of the other things. But, yeah, let's go ahead and get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Had forgotten that we had a call holding while we were at break. And Uncle Ollie gets us started here with hour number two. Hey, Uncle Ollie.
Hey, guys. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, man. The way I understand it, I think Aflac is the one that's providing $4 million to NIL.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
right.
If you sell out your ticket, it's an additional $4 million if it's a sellout.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so that's another incentive. Of course, I don't know about you, Bill, but when I ordered my tickets, I did get Baylor tickets.
Right, so did I. Yep. I did.
Yeah. So the other thing is I want to talk a little bit about this Sarkisian-Kiffin thing. And so I think they're coming from two different angles.
Oh, yeah, it sure appear to be.
Yeah, and so Sarkisian, I think his deal, he's just vocal about what a lot of SEC coaches are thinking, not even SEC, but outside of the SEC. With the way Ole Miss tampered so much and got called out by Dabo. And I think that's where he's coming from. I think that they're just mad at Ole Miss. And I know everybody tampers, but it was so blatant and the way he got called out. I think that's where Sarkisian's coming from. Is there, you know, the NCAA has not done nothing about what Dabo complained about, and so I think just a lot of coaches were kind of PO'd about what Ole Miss did with tampering.
Oh, and understandably, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's where Sarkisian is coming from. Now, Lane Kiffin, totally different ball game. What Kiffin did, he gave an interview to, and I'm sure you know this, but maybe a lot of people don't. Vanity Fair is basically the New York Times. They are a huge liberal rag. And so what he did was he gave them ammunition to the stereotype that all of those people that read that magazine, he gave them ammo so they can repeatedly say, see, the South is still racist. They're still racist. And I think that's where he messed up.
Although even then I would, you know, he was making the distinction right between Baton Rouge, Louisiana and Oxford, Mississippi, right? It's not as though he was saying, well, it's one way in Michigan or in Ohio, and it's another way in Oxford, Mississippi. He was sort of, I think he was pointing to, I mean, you could say it's the entire South. I think he was sort of pointing to Mississippi. And suggesting that even other parts of the South have evolved past what Oxford, Mississippi currently is.
Oh, okay. So
Like obviously
he hasn't been in Baton Rouge long enough to figure out.
But I mean, in his
same
quotes,
thing goes there.
In his comments when he says, "Well, these problems don't come up when I say Baton Rouge, Louisiana, but they came up when I said Oxford, Mississippi." It's like I can get how you'd say like, "All right, he's talking about the entire South," but he seemed to be even drawing a distinction between his new home and where he used to coach.
And that's all about recruiting.
Yes, indeed.
But here's the problem. He threw the South under the bus for recruiting. That's just my opinion.
I think he totally threw.
He led into the stereotype that we have here, that we're still, you know, segregated. We're still racist. Yes, there's racism. There's racism here. There's racism in Boston, Massachusetts.
Indeed.
There's racism in New York City. But what he did was he added fuel to that conception that we're still down here burning crosses. Mm-hmm. And so when he says that to a magazine like Vanity Fair, the people that read that say, "There you go. We knew this is exactly what we've always thought."
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, Uncle Ollie. I don't know that he did it knowingly, although Lane usually has a pretty good idea who he's speaking to and who that audience is going to be.
But and when Tommy Tuberville, as you mentioned, Bill, when Tommy Tuberville also raised concerns about Ole Miss and trying to recruit there, I mean, he stayed in the South, right? I mean, he's done, Tommy Tuberville was, you know, came to Auburn. It's I think there's absolutely some of that, Uncle Ollie. I would still say that it seemed like Lane Kiffin was more burying his, and I know he's tried to clarify that that's not his intention, but in drawing distinctions between Baton Rouge and Oxford.
I would love to have heard the whole interview, the question, and then the response. I mean, that's something a lot of times you don't get. And
I heard the author of the article say that he didn't ask him the question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Lane Kiffin volunteered it.
Now, that's interesting.
He did not ask him the question. He brought it up. He volunteered it.
Yeah, I mean, it's appreciate the phone call too, Uncle Ollie. Good stuff. With Lane Kiffin, I mean, you know, and I know some folks are going to question the source, right? Like, I think it's like, well, where's, you know, what are Lane Kiffin's motivations in talking about something like this? Is it part of hey, forgive Lane Kiffin for how he left Ole Miss last season, because there was a lot of negativity around the decision to leave a team during the playoff to go stay in conference and go somewhere else, and it was something that, I mean, I think Lane Kiffin's image maybe took a bit of a bruising.
I don't know
between
that, I don't know this is going to help that an awful lot. I can't see that. I mean, I can see some people saying, "Well, okay, now we understand why he left," and there are going to be other people that are going to they're going to vilify him even more.
Yeah.
For adding this, you know, if he wants to use this as his reasoning. So I don't know.
Oh, I think folks would view it pretty cynically, right? As far as like, oh,
yes,
that's what you're, that's, you know, that's the, it wasn't the money. It wasn't the idea that LSU offers a greater opportunity to win potentially. It was Ole Miss's attachment to the old South. Like that was the thing that, yeah. So I can understand why people who were already skeptical of Lane Kiffin probably aren't changing their mind.
No. So, yeah, some interesting stuff there. Yeah, thanks for the call, Uncle Ollie.
Good stuff.
334-321-1390. We have one more segment.
I do enjoy the movie reviews in Vanity Fair occasionally, but I suppose when you get into broader cultural stuff, maybe it takes a political stand.
Yeah. Again, we've got another segment before Jake Crane joins us from Crane and Cohn. So we'll go ahead and get to that. We'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Join us. You got 15 more minutes or so before we check in with Jake here on the Tuesday Drive.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron. Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Yes, Auburn baseball about a half an hour away from the pregame over on Wings 94.3. And then first pitch a little after 6 o'clock tonight. Yeah,
Andy just posted a picture on social media. Looks pretty clear. The skies are looking pretty good for baseball there in Jacksonville. Rudy Abbott Field as, top 25 matchup. Jacksonville State, number 24. In the Baseball America poll, and they are they're hosting Auburn tonight in a big in-state non-conference showdown, the last week of the regular season in college baseball.
Looks like pretty much the Auburn regular starting lineup, as you would expect. They're just sort of chugging along, playing really, really well. Mason McCrane leading things off for the Tigers. Eric Guevara hitting second. Bob Terrell batting third against the righty on the mound. For Jack State tonight, Chris Rembert will hit cleanup. Ethan Bingaman, your three-time now SEC Freshman of the Week, will hit fifth. Eddie Madrigal batting sixth. Brandon McCrane at seventh. Lucas Steele hitting eighth. And then Bristol Carter batting ninth.
And in the tournament projection that Baseball America posted today, they've got Auburn as the number three overall team in the field, the number three seed, and they've got Jacksonville State as the 30th overall seed and the two seed in the Auburn regional.
Yeah, so I saw that there was another one today that had Jack State as the two seed in Athens. Mm-hmm. I think Georgia was the was Auburn the three? You said Auburn was the three?
Three overall, yeah.
All right, yeah, I saw one.
UCLA won, Georgia Tech two. All right, Baseball America.
All right, yeah. The other one I saw today had Georgia as the three and Auburn as the four and had Jack State as the two seed there.
Georgia is the four in Baseball America's current projection. And you see a lot of SEC.
I think there were five. Were there five SEC teams in Baseball America? There were five or six in the other one that I saw today.
The top eight or the top 16?
Top eight.
In the top eight, they've got
five. I think
they've got Auburn, Georgia, Texas, Alabama, and Florida.
Yeah, Alabama was seven.
In the top eight. Yeah, Bama seven, mm-hmm. Florida eight.
Yeah. So I mean that's not shocking. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the way it's going to be in most. I mean and you'll see some. Small differences, but I mean, look, the more information
12
there is.
12 SEC yeah, teams in the draw.
The more information there is, I mean, the less difference there are going to be in a lot of the projections. You're going to have different groups of four, but I mean, you're still going to have pretty much basically the same top 16.
Troy on the bubble, but it seems like they probably are going to need to win the Sun Belt tournament to get in. Feels like they're projected on the wrong side of the bubble by a lot of the. By a lot of the folks, a couple of Sun Belt teams. Couple of Sun Belt teams. The Coastal Carolina and Southern Miss are near the top of projections. Southern Miss is a top 16 seed in a lot of these, and Coastal Carolina is one of the top two seeds. There's a chance that an SEC team talked about it yesterday. There's a chance an SEC team is dealing with the two seed Coastal Carolina. In their regional.
Yeah, no question about that. I mean,
Coastal's the two in the Florida State regional in the Baseball America projection, but you could see Coastal Carolina as a two seed.
There was another one I saw where Coastal was the two. I mean, I've seen Coastal and Jack State as the two in Athens.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's so let's see.
Auburn as a top five team, it would be unlike. I mean, Coastal's between. Coastal's between 18 and 22 in most of these projections, so you probably wouldn't see
That's where this weekend could be really important.
Yes,
it could. That's where you want to make sure you win at least one game.
Yes, it could.
This weekend you want to slide down a little bit and have teams like that that could be the number two in your region or, you know, the number two. The other thing is, though, they could be the number two in a region that you're matched up with if you're still one of the top eight national seeds.
And we get the bubble the bracket a week from Sunday, right? I believe is the unveiling selection Monday. It's a week from Monday. We will get the full projection of the NCAA tournament bracket.
Yeah, after all the conference tournaments wrap up. Again, Auburn facing a righty tonight in Jack State. Ryan Garaghty. That's the way it looks like. G-E-R-A-G-H-T-Y, Garaghty, who is 1-1 on the season, only thrown 29 and two-thirds innings, and has a 6.37 earned run average and a 1.69 whip. But we will see how things go tonight for the Tigers and the Gamecocks as Auburn. Auburn doesn't want to get swept by Jacksonville State.
And it may not be the last time you see him.
No.
That's the other thing. So we'll, tonight, the next week you get four more games against tournament caliber competition, right? Georgia's as good as a team. Georgia's super regional good, maybe Omaha good. You're going to see them this weekend. I mean, you're talking about a team that won, 21 SEC games with three to play? Like, I mean,
yeah, 21-6, and the second best record in the league is 16-10.
Yeah, I mean, that's
Texas and Texas.
So that's how good the Georgia team is that you're going to see this weekend. You're seeing Jacksonville State on the road tonight.
I heard Butch say this earlier today. There are only seven teams in the nation that have won 40 games. Auburn plays two of them this week.
And
Jack State and Georgia are two of the seven teams in the country that have won 40 games.
And you know you're getting quality competition in Hoover next week, and there's a chance, depending on where Auburn sits in the draw, you could be facing a tournament team next week in the first. I mean, if you're not in the top four of that 16-team that 16-team bracket, if you're not 1, 2, 3, or 4, you're probably facing.
Oh, you are.
You could be facing like Kentucky. If you're the 5 seed, it's like you're facing a tournament team in the first round of the 16.
You would expect because you should be getting the 12. It should be 5-12, 6-11, 7-10, 8-9.
And Vanderbilt is a team we talked about a little bit yesterday. Like the computer numbers don't like Vanderbilt at all in the conference.
No. I think they're a 70 something RPI.
They would need to make it. They need to win this week. And they would need to
at least go deep, if not win the SEC tournament.
They would need to make a deep run to even get the committee to think about putting them in as like
because
the last team.
Because each time they play, they should be playing a tournament team.
Right, but so you.
But
could
it's going to take a few. But I think it would take a few to bump them up as much as they need to get.
So there's the thought of a Vanderbilt or a Kentucky. Kentucky's probably in, but
yeah, Kentucky should be in.
The thought that you have a team with like a lot to play for next week in the SEC tournament, you could face them too. And again, all this in service of you're going to get that postseason. You're going to get that bracket in just about 10 days now. Well, 2 weeks. You're going to get that unveiled NCAA tournament bracket, and all bets are off as far as we'll see. We'll see where Auburn who Auburn draws, where Auburn may need to go potentially depending on if they can stay in the top eight or not, and what the path would be to get to Omaha.
Yeah, right now, let's see. Like I said, Georgia's got 41 wins. Mississippi State's 38-14 after dropping 2 of 3 to Auburn this past weekend. So they've got they had the second best record in the league. But Texas A&M and Texas are both 37-12. Alabama 35-17. Auburn 35-15. Going into play tonight. I mean, those are your winningest teams in the SEC going into action tonight. We were talking about it. Andy mentioned it a while ago. Kentucky canceled their midweek game this week, a day after the NCAA discouraged teams from doing that, but had no recourse. There were no penalty. They just said, "Don't do that, please." And then Kentucky did. Who was Kentucky playing?
They were going to play NKU. It was Northern Kentucky. Was going to be the
All that was going to do is drag their RPI down.
Yeah, and they called it a mutual decision to cancel the game.
Why would Northern Kentucky? Probably mutual because Kentucky paid them to do that. That's the mutual agreement. Northern Kentucky went, sure, we'll take your money and not play. That's fine. We won't have another loss. I don't think they're going anywhere anyway. 334-321-1390. We've got a few minutes before we get to our bottom of the hour break.
Let's try to squeeze Mitch in real quick.
Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. I was just thinking, because you were talking about Vanderbilt. They had a pitcher a couple of years ago. I think that was the son of an Auburn football player. What is his status now? Where is he?
Talking about Kumar Rocker?
Kumar Rocker, Rangers?
Yeah. He's on the Rangers, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
he's had a couple of arm injuries, but I mean, a big-time pitching prospect.
Yeah, debuted in 24. He had a he was drafted by the Mets, and they couldn't come to terms, right?
Like,
he was taken in the first round, and the team that signed him couldn't come to terms with him, and so, or the team that drafted him couldn't come to terms with him on a deal, so he went back into the draft a year later.
Yeah, he played like in the independent league.
Yeah, I was going to say he didn't return to Vandy.
No,
but he did but he played independent league baseball and then went in the draft a year later to Texas and has been in their system ever since. Debuted a couple of years ago.
Some arm problems. So I mean, yeah, thus far this year, he's 1-4 with an ERA just over 5, and for his career, he's 5-11 with an ERA over 5.
Had a couple of really nice starts earlier this year. Pitched well against Pittsburgh in an interleague game. Pitched well against the A's, but still finding his way as a major leaguer.
Okay, all right. I totally forgotten about that. Y'all mentioned Vandy, and I was like, they had a stud pitcher that was.
They've had a few stud pitchers. Mm-hmm.
They've had quite a few. But one that had an Auburn connect.
Yes.
So, all right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. And Kamar, I mean, an imposing figure. The Rangers list him at 6'5", 245.
Yeah, went third overall to the Rangers a year after. Yeah, went 10th overall in the 21 draft, and then a year later went third overall in the 22 draft. So sometimes it pays to take that gap year between.
still hasn't quite, been able to live up to the expectations yet. But, I mean, He's still fairly young. He's 26, I believe, now. Hope he can just stay healthy and reach the potential that so many folks expect from Kamar. All right, we will we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane of Crane and Cone will join in on the other side. So no reason to leave yet here on the.
Unless you're Bill.
Unless you're me.
Unless you're Bill and you're leaving right now.
I have to.
No reason to leave yet.
I mean our listeners to leave. I'll listen. But yeah, I've got something I've got to get to here in a little bit. But I figure Dan and Jake can handle it for the final half hour.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Bill.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
On The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. At the controls, Bill Cameron had to step aside to go attend a fancy black tie affair. He'll tell us all about it tomorrow. He's eating cucumber sandwiches and, you know, fancy smoking big cigars. He'll tell us about the function that he had to attend and leave the show a little bit early. In the meantime. Happy to go to the bullpen and bring in one of our favorites to join us in hour number two on Tuesdays from Crane and Cone. Jake Crane, how you doing, Jake?
Man, doing fantastic. Appreciate y'all having me. Hope everybody's doing well out there.
Yeah, Bill had to step out. You know, he big timed us, but he'll
he likes to live dangerously.
sends his regards. Hey, we were talking about. Throughout the show that apparently it's Barry Ole Miss Day in the SEC and everybody's taking their turn. I kind of want to pivot this to like what could actually happen on the field this fall. And it does seem like, you know, there are a couple of programs coming into the season with a ton of strength, and Texas looks like one of the contenders. Like what's your read on, to, you know, I guess let's leave the underwater basket weaving out of it for just a second. Like what's your read on the team that Sark has going into this year and the chances that Texas could fulfill all those expectations?
Well, I mean, it's hard not to sit here and look and look at that roster and look at the depth. And you know, you bring in Will Muschamp as DC. I mean, outside of that, you got a lot of continuity. I don't know how you don't look at that and think that Texas is going to be really, really good. And, you know, this year they get Ohio State at home. You know, another thing, though, when you look at the schedule is this Texas team – with Arch coming back, adding Cam Coleman, having Ryan Wingo, I look at the offensive line, and if they're able to run the ball even decently well, they're going to have a chance to, I think, fulfill those.
Yeah, and then, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of curiosity about Lane Kiffin's first team at LSU. I mean, we mentioned they're going to Ole Miss pretty early in the season, as though that game needed any more juice. Lane Kiffin talks to Vanity Fair and talks about the difficulties of recruiting at the difficulty of recruiting to Ole Miss during his tenure there. What's your forecast for year one for Lane Kiffin at LSU?
Well, as far as that game goes, I just hope they're able to play it. I mean, they have to call the National Guard. I don't know if you used to saw the guy throw the haymaker at the baseball game between LSU and Ole Miss. That was just an appetizer compared to what could happen. Man, you know, here's when I look at Ole Miss, it's really interesting to me. We actually did our top five new hires, who we think is going to have the best year in year one. You feel like LSU, from a three-phase standpoint, is more talented than Ole Miss. But Ole Miss bringing back Trinidad, bringing back Kewon Lacy, we know offensively the pieces they have. Can that front seven continue to play the way they've played? That's what's really elevated Ole Miss. I mean, Dan, you know, we've watched Ole Miss be able to score points for a long time. The problem was they could never stop anybody. But with guys like Will Echols and some other pieces, even losing Prince to LSU, I think they're going to be fine. I do, however, even though that game is in Oxford, I think LSU is the better team overall. But again, Sam Levitt's foot, and I've had a Liz Frank before with my foot, it's not something that just totally disappears, and we'll know within the first couple of snaps of the first game just how that thing is. So right now I like LSU, but if Sam Levitt comes out there and he's not able to do the things with his legs that he's typically able to do, you're really going to kind of force LSU to play a style they don't want to play. But right now, I'll go with LSU. But as far as everybody burying him, man, I mean, the Sark stuff came out of left field. Nothing Lane says about Ole Miss surprises me. But Sark coming off the – it's like a tag team wrestling thing when some guy comes running out of the tunnel out of nowhere that you didn't think was going to be there. It's just it's going to be such a crazy environment. I cannot wait. I wish I was going.
Sark rappelled down from the roof like Sting to drop an elbow.
That one caught me. I did not see that one coming.
I love the Jace Brown acquisition for LSU. I think that guy's like a megastar at wide receiver. You know, a guy that I wanted to see in an Auburn uniform. Yes,
was nice at Kansas State too.
He's Northwest Florida. You know, that's part of it. But I also think this guy's got just a ton of game. But with Ole Miss, Jake, like, I don't even know if it's necessarily about the defense being better. It's about, like, maybe they can maintain on offense, keeping Trinidad and keeping Lacy. Yeah. And some of these other teams in the SEC may take a step back offensively with some of the players that they've lost, and they don't have replacements waiting in the wings.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see a world where Ole Miss is bad on offense,
right?
Even though you lose Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss Jr., and Trinidad can just do so many things. And Kewon may be the top running back taken in this draft, especially after what just happened to Ahmad Hardy for Missouri. But, yeah, will they be able to maintain the same level offensively that they had last year? That would not surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if it dipped down a little bit, but was still really good. But, again,
Trinidad could get better. How about that, Jake?
No, he could, for sure. But again, the defense is what has elevated. I mean, Dan, Ole Miss led the SEC in tackles for loss 2 years ago. They were top three in the league in tackles for loss last year. They became a balanced football team. That's the thing that Lincoln Riley can't get right. And Lane kind of had that same problem for a while, but they were able to figure it out, and that defense was able to step up. If that continues, Ole Miss is going nowhere. And Pete Golding, being a defensive guy, you would think that that defense would be prepared and they have good enough athletes to be effective. It's just at what level can they be effective compared to what they've done the past couple seasons?
If the drop-off happens in year one or the first full year for Pete Golding, like if the slide happens this year, you worry you worry about,
for sure,
right? Like, I mean,
the table's set.
Yes,
the table's set for you this year.
Yeah, if things break apart this year, you wonder how smooth the next couple of years after that are going to be, or you wonder if the party's over. I mean, we've seen this before where, like, sometimes you think a program has arrived and it's actually just they had the right coach. And without that coach, there's a different level of success. And we'll see if that's, I mean we're still waiting to see if that's Auburn and Bruce Pearl, right? Like if Auburn can maintain, you know, in the aftermath. And I think there's absolutely it's fair to wonder if that's Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin, and if they've actually arrived as a program and there's something different, or if they were just something different when Lane Kiffin was their coach.
Well, it is kind of interesting because of what happened at the end of last year, right? Like, Pete Golding's actually built up some equity before he even went through his first full year as the head coach with what they did in the playoff with him as the interim, and then he got, you know, obviously turned into the permanent head coach.
Yeah, lose to Lane on September 19th. We'll see what happens to that equity.
We know how that goes. It'd be like if Bruce Pearl had to retire before the NCAA tournament and Stephen Pearl took Auburn to the Final Four. Like, that next year, you're feeling a little bit better about the guy taking over than if he hadn't done that.
It'd be like if Bruce was coaching at Kentucky right now.
That's exactly right. But no, again, I think both teams, LSU and Ole Miss, it's going to be a heck of a game. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to probably take the over in it. I just wonder who the more mature team will be, because, you know, you can't let the outside noise and what's going on in the stands and all this other stuff affect you in getting stupid penalties or trying to do too much and getting out of a gap or trying to jump a route when you shouldn't jump it. That's what I want to see. I want to see who the more mature team can be, because that's who's going to win, and I think it's going to tell you a lot about the head coach and the direction that program's going.
Talking with Jake Crane from Crane and Cone here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Let's pivot to college baseball a little bit, because we're just under 2 weeks away from Selection Monday for the NCAA baseball tournament, and the baseball postseason is one of the best things in sports, right? The college baseball postseason is just, it's so great. Regional play is a magical weekend, and then you get the super regionals, like the round of 16 and just high-stakes baseball all day long, all weekend long. Auburn looking in pretty good position to host in regional play, and if they can get to super regional play, hosting there as well. I mean, what a season for Butch Thompson and company so far.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, Dan. I think they got a top eight national seed locked up already after winning those last two at state. I don't know how you look across the country, and even if, and I don't think they will, but if they got swept by Georgia, you won six out of your last seven series, including road series wins at Texas A&M, at Mississippi State, and I think at Florida too. Did we win two out of three at Florida, or am I tripping?
Auburn won the Florida series too, yeah.
Yeah, like how, okay, like again, at this point, Georgia's what, number three in the country, four in the country? Yeah. I will say, I actually think, and I know I want Auburn to win the SEC and this, that, and the other, Georgia locking that thing up last weekend, they may come in and play free and hit 35 home runs. I don't know. But I do think it's actually advantage Auburn that thing's already locked up. And my question now is, let's say Auburn wins two out of three against Georgia. We're not no longer talking about, like, being a national seed. Mm-hmm. It's how high of a seed is Auburn going to get? When you look at the rankings and kind of the way teams are fluctuating right now, I think we could be looking at a top three, top four seed.
Baseball America's projection from earlier today has Auburn as the number three overall seed in the field. Georgia's the four
Butch
seed.
Butch Thompson, save us, Butch.
Yeah.
Save us once again.
I mean, there's talk. I mean, look, half or maybe even five of the top eight could be from the SEC, and there could be 12 SEC teams in the draw. This is, I mean, it's going to be, and this is something you're going to see in a lot of postseasons I think, moving forward. Like the overwhelming number of SEC teams that are participating in this thing, that are earning their way into the field, and Auburn has a chance of being the top SEC team in the draw. I mean, depends on what the committee values. It depends on what happens between now and Selection Monday. But absolutely, like Auburn could be in excellent position for the second year in a row going into the college baseball postseason. Couldn't get past Coastal Carolina in Super Regionals last year, but this is an Auburn team that looks like they've got everything.
Dan,
let me
ask you this. When is the last time you remember an Auburn team, even with Butch Thompson, having pitching all around?
That's the secret sauce,
Jake. I'm trying to remember.
Because the thing is, Auburn is so good on Sundays. Auburn is so good in Game 3 because a lot of other teams in the conference, it's bullpen day or it's leftovers day, right? It's you're throwing whatever you have in the pen still available against an Auburn starter that would be a Friday starter for half the league.
And Auburn's got four starters. Sanders is an SEC starter. It's so nice to be. He just comes in and throws four innings and gets it done. And then you have – I mean, there's sometimes, I'll be honest with you, I'm watching Auburn, like in Mississippi State in the ninth. I'm like, why is Heitzler not in? Mm-hmm. Like, put the guy that's 96 with three pitches in as a closer. But Jackson Sanders just goes out there. He throws a low ball. He works the bottom of the strike zone. He's got kind of that three-quarter delivery. But mm-hmm. but I think what makes Auburn so lethal pitching-wise, and you really saw it, in the Mississippi State, or excuse me, in the Texas A&M doubleheader, is you get two totally opposites back to back. Alvarez and Marciano could not be more opposite in the way they pitch, the style they pitch, the velocity, the movement, arm side. I think, especially in a doubleheader, can you imagine facing those guys? You're playing 18 innings in a day. And, well, the first game, we beat them to death, but typically you're playing 18 innings in a day, and you're getting a soft lefty with a ton of control that can throw any pitch wherever he wants at any point in time. And then you got Alvarez, who's basically the kid from Dragon Ball Z.
He's throwing gasohol, right? I mean,
I saw him hit 98 the other day. You know how fast 98 is?
And that game Friday night, too. I mean, Auburn had already dropped the first game. There's 14,000 people going crazy. Like, for Alvarez to face that down, yeah. I mean that tells you, like, I feel...
The real ones want it, though. The real ones want the smoke. That's what I like.
It's like...
Because he's out there giving it right back to him. That's the stuff I like. That's what we need on the football team. We want guys who want the smoke like that.
And I feel good about Alvarez in any situation he's going to see the rest of the year if he can get up and answer the bell there.
It's going to get easier. Like, the hardest part of the season is conference play. I mean, look at these last three series. Yeah. There's no way it's going to get harder than that.
Cannot wait. A week from now, we'll be talking about Hoover, and we'll be projecting the bracket. And then 2 weeks from today, we'll be reacting to the NCAA postseason bracket in college baseball. We'll know who Auburn is facing in regional play. We'll know who Auburn could match up with potentially in super regional play. And there's a lot of options there, Jake. You could be talking about SEC versus SEC in some of these super regional matchups. Coastal Carolina looms as a super villain out there
Jake? Them.
They could be a two seed in some SEC team's regional. Like Coastal,
it's not ours. Can't do it two years in a row. Probably not.
You know what? Actually, I think that a lot of projections have Auburn's opponent tonight, Jacksonville State, as the two seed in the Auburn regional. A team that Auburn saw earlier this year. A team that Auburn's seeing for the second time tonight. That's a team that a lot of folks think could be a top 32 seed and an opponent for Auburn in the postseason. Someone's gonna draw Coastal. Like, someone's going to get Coastal as their two seed, and like Seinfeld would say, right? Good luck with all that.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you're going to host. You got to go out there and win. You're the better
team.
That's
right.
You're a top three, top four national seed. You know, if I'm supposed to be over here, and I got a ton of respect for Jacksonville State's program, obviously South Alabama's, UAB's, but it never in any world should Auburn be shaking in their boots mm-hmm. over anything Jacksonville State does on a football field, baseball field, basketball court, or whatever.
Yeah, if Jacksonville State goes and wins a regional, like they earned it. right? They're going to go. They go on the road and,
for sure.
and they go on the road and beat an SEC team.
I would love to have Jacksonville State in the Supers, Dan. I would love to have Jacksonville State in the Supers at Auburn.
Can't wait to see what it looks like tonight. Jake, tell everybody what you and the gang are getting up to at Crane and Cone.
Yeah, man. I mean, we're talking a little bit of everything today. Like I told you, we put out our top five new hires. We had Cole Kublik on, talked about Alex Golish. You can find that easiest way is YouTube. It's Crane and Cone, C-R-A-I-N and Cone. Yeah, just come hang out with us. We're having a good time. About to start talking a little college baseball as well. So, yeah, come kick it with us.
Tell you what, Jake, I like what Golish has brought to the offense, you know, not just philosophically, but also like as in players from South Florida that are going to be a big part of the Auburn offense this fall. A big reason to like the defense is because so many guys stuck around. Like there are a lot of important,
yeah, including the DC,
a lot of important Auburn players, the Auburn defensive coordinator, the Auburn defensive line coach, Von Trell. Like there are some holdovers, right? Shout out to Paul Giamatti. There are some holdovers from last year that could be a big reason why Auburn bounces back.
No, without a doubt. Well, I think the mindset's different. There's no more hoping gets you nothing. Hope. It's not a plan. It's not a plan. Hope is not a plan. This whole I'm not okay, you're not okay, but that's okay, things done. Golish came here to win or die trying, and I love it.
Appreciate it, Jake. We will talk to you again next Tuesday.
All right, Dan. Tell Bill I said what's up. Hope he's having fun at his Great Gatsby party.
Oh, absolutely. He's doing the Charleston right now. And
For sure.
The jitterbug. All right, great stuff, Jake. Jake Crane joining us as he does on Tuesdays. We're going to wrap things up. We'll be back with more. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
Paid for by McGinnis for Alabama, 203 Investment Lane, Summerdale, Alabama, 36580.
Hillary.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Fun show today, and there's the music. Appreciate Andy Burcham joining us in hour number one, voice of the Auburn Tigers. Auburn Sports Network coverage of Auburn and Jacksonville State tonight on Wings 94.3. Flip over, you can catch Auburn baseball on Wings. Tomorrow should have our buddy Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. Should have Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser, so you're not going to want to miss tomorrow's edition of The Drive. Missed any of today's show? Check out the podcast, espnau.com. Use the podcast center or search for The Drive with Bill Cameron on your favorite podcasting platform. For Bill Cameron, Dan Peck signing off. Thank you for listening. Talk to you tomorrow. Good night.